Voice of Brevard.
You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're also heard on the World Wide Web.
Ms. We are Ellen, on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button on your phone or any computer device, actually. And you'll be able to hear us live each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Or if you're unable to catch the show live, you can go to our archived pages, which one of them is on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that on-demand button and just pick the date. Or you can go to our website, which is cedamediainc.com, and then also our Facebook page, which is...
We're all over the place, actually.
We really are. Actually, if you just Google Sita Biggie,
oh, gosh,
about a million things comes up.
I feel like it's a different person most of the time.
Well, it's much easier to market you when you're somebody else. You know,
so, make your life easier.
You know,
if you're
Sita, I want to talk about one thing that happened a couple of weekends ago. I was playing; our band was playing at Pier 220 up in Titusville, and I met these lovely women from the Women's Center, which you and I have always supported, of course, and have had them on the show a few times. But they are doing a fantastic charity event, which is going to be Saturday, October 29th. It's from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. It's at Fox Lake Park Main Pavilion in Titusville. The tickets are $25 and the VIP tickets are $50. So it's Western attire, line dancing, jail and bail, barbecue and beverages, and they're going to have music by the Whiskey Jars. The event is called Boots and Bandits. It's a fifth annual fundraiser. And they are raising the money to assist victims of domestic violence and sexual assault in Brevard County, which as a former person that was a victim of domestic violence, as written in your book, I always know, like, these types of things are near and dear to my heart.
And what date is this?
It's October 29th, which is next weekend, next Saturday night from 6:30 to 9:30.
They'll call back?
They will call back.
All right,
she again.
So, you know, so today's Diwali. It is the Indian New Year. This is the day when Hindus all over the world, in India and the diaspora, this is when they celebrate the celebration of light over darkness. We celebrate good over evil, and we hope for people to have health, wealth, prosperity, and just move on and let their inner light shine. Of course, us Hindus believe that Mother Lakshmi is a light that's shining today. And so people clean their homes, they invite their families, they cook, they eat. I woke up this morning, I made some vegetarian dishes, I made a nice dessert, and I'm going to go to the temple and pray for the world, for peace, unity, harmony, so that we can be our brothers and sisters, keepers, not just in words, but in action as well.
And you look absolutely beautiful today.
Thank you.
Well, and so make sure that you get to our Facebook page so that you can see Sita's outfit, because she just looks gorgeous today.
All right. Thank you, Ellen. So on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill, myself, and Ali Tambor, we sit here and we talk about kitchen table topics and things that are going on around the world. And today's no different. We're speaking today with the running mate for Charlie Crist. Her name is Carla Hernandez Matz. There's a little dash and there's Matz next to it. Easy name to say. And the second segment, we have an author who's calling in. Her name is Lisa Reisbeck, and she will be calling in to speak about the human connection, mental health, addictions, and more. But Ellen, did you know that Charlie Crist picked an awesome person for his running mate. And I can't say enough about her. I met her last week, and with, you know, after the primary, we weren't sure he was going to pick. And he went ahead and he picked the thrice elected president of the United Teachers of Dade, which is called UTD. Hernandez Matz overseed the operations of the largest labor union in southeast of the United States in the fourth largest school district nationwide. Her bio is quite extensive. Talks about her dad, her where she grew up in Miami-Dade in the public school system, graduated from FIU, and things like that. And she's on the phone, so we're going to welcome her to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and let's ask her a little bit about herself. Carla, thank you for taking time off your busy schedule as a running mate for Charlie Crist, who is trying to get his old job back and become the governor for the state of Florida. Welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, my friend Sita, thank you so much for having me. It is great to be here with Sita and Friends. And, you know, just I'm thrilled about what's happening. Today's early voting in a lot of counties in the state of Florida. So we want to encourage all communities to come out and vote. And, of course, you know, some counties are starting in different days, but we just want everybody to be informed. We want people to use the power of their voice and their votes. And, you know, Sita, I know that you've been doing a lot of community activism, and, you know, you're very embedded in your community. The community knows you and loves you because they know the heart that you have and how you've been fighting for education and community and trying to make things better. So this is a big deal, Sita. This is a big deal that Charlie picked a labor union leader, a mom, you know, a child of immigrants, an activist, and, you know, somebody that really just wants to make sure that community always has a seat in the table. So I'm thrilled to be here with Sita and Friends. You know, let's talk. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, I...
what you won't talk about?
Well, I tell you, I met you last week, and your personality, the aura, everything about you is so honest. And I can tell by just talking to you and watching you interact with other people that you care about people. And you are a first-generation American born to Honduran immigrants. Talk to us a little bit about your childhood and growing up here as a young girl.
You know, Sita, I have a story that's very real that I think is not unique to me. I think that a lot of us can actually, you know, just understand it and really just relate to it. My parents both came from Honduras. My dad was a farm worker. He cut sugarcane. He picked tomatoes. And then one day he was given the opportunity to become a skilled laborer. He became a carpenter. And he was really active in his union because he understood the importance of the labor force, the labor movement, unions, and treating people with dignity and respect. Not second-class citizens. So my beginnings were super humble, small house, two-bedroom, one bath. I shared my room and my bed with my grandmother. And my grandmother taught me so much about generosity. And, you know, she said that you support community and you help others because you never know what other people's struggles are. And so all these things that my parents and my grandmother lived through really shaped and formed the person that I am. And, when I was in high school, I realized that my grandmother did not have the opportunity to learn to read or write. She was born in 1920, no women's rights, so they didn't think that it was important for her to have access to an education. She was 9 years old when she started working in someone's kitchen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about her and everything that she went through. And, you know, so when I became an adult, I said, I'm going to give back. You know, I'm going to honor my parents and their legacy and what they're trying to do in this country and in this community. I'm going to give back and I'm going to serve and be a teacher. And I've been doing it for 19 years. I believe that all children, no matter their race, their nationality, their zip code, every child deserves access to a high quality public education where they feel safe. And so we need to pour into our community. We need to pour love and we need to pour resources. And that's how we make a better community. And in this journey, I've met so many amazing people, including you, Sita, who are just doing God's work every single day, fighting for community, trying to make sure that things are better. And, you know, I'm just honored. I'm honored and thrilled. And I'm real. I keep it real.
You are. And you know what? I just want to congratulate you, too, because I read that, you know, Charlie Crist had 17 other potential running mates.
Wow.
And he chose you. So there's something about you. There's that spark of humanity in you. And I love it. So, You know, one of the things you touch on when you were speaking was the love for human beings and what we can do as human beings. One doesn't really have to be elected into office to make a difference, but you will be elected, and you did make a difference. And I want to tell you a quick story, too, why I became an activist. You know, my mother was here in the United States, and we were at the immigration department in Orlando, and there were many Hispanic people there, and they were thirsty, and they wanted some water. So a lot of the people, including my mom, who spoke, you know, English, but broken English from the Caribbean, they went to get the water, and the fountain wasn't working. Three water fountains wasn't working. And this was like 27 years ago, and my mom said, you know how to read and write. Why don't you write a letter and tell the people that all these people here, they speak Spanish and different languages, and they can't get a drink of water? So sure enough, I came home, and I wrote a letter to the then governor for the state of Florida. And do you know they fixed those fountains? And that is how I became an activist, because I cared about the elderly. Because a lot of the families didn't want to leave their mothers and families sitting there and go to 7-Eleven, like the security guard had suggested, and buy a drink. And I could see the fear in the people's eyes that they would have to sit there without their petitioners and go get the water. And so that was one of the main reasons why I became an activist, because I got results.
Yes.
Wow. What an amazing story, right? And a testament to you and what your family instilled in you, too. And so a few really remarkable things about your story is how your mom empowered you, right? She said, you're a child, but you can write and you can make a difference. And then, of course, how you used your voice and how you were active and you made something positive out of something that was negative. And, you know, we just need more of that. If we had more people that cared and more people that used their voice, the collective power of community, we would be in such a better place, you know, in the world. And, you know, I think that's key. And that's what we want. I mean, I want to leave this world a better place than I found it. And I think that a lot of people are out there trying to make a difference. And we just got to make it happen. Just keep on, you know, doing what you do. Keep on inspiring folks. And to all the little kids that are listening, like, you can do it too. Like, you can inspire, you can motivate, you can make a difference. So, you know, make sure that you do what everybody else has taught you to do.
And Carla, support them. Carla, that attitude you have, it would go really well in a debate tonight. Is that right?
You know, I'm not going to be debating, but Charlie's debating. Charlie Crist is debating with the current governor. But I'm really excited about it, because I think people are going to get to see just two very opposite type of campaigns. You know, Ron DeSantis is fear-mongering. He's anti-immigrant. He's anti-women's rights. He's anti-public education, anti so many things. And we're going to get to see Charlie Crist, who's not only eloquent, but, you know, he's debated on stage before. He's going to, you know, just speak with authenticity. He's going to be compassionate towards people and humanity and what we need. And he is going to show everybody in the state of Florida how we unite this state, not how we divide it and how we turn it into something divisive, which is what he's doing now. You know, but how Charlie Crist is going to unite the state and make it better for everyone. So I'm excited. I hope you're having a watch party.
Yeah, we are. We're going to try. And, you know, one of the things that I hope to see tonight is I want to hear Governor DeSantis and Charlie Crist speak about the runaway housing crisis. I mean, we're watching what's happening with so many people who, even though they're now making $15 an hour, I know the janitors where I work and the nursing assistants and people here in Brevard, they were really excited to say, hey, we're now making $15 an hour. But even with that, a one-bedroom apartment right here in Brevard is over $1,100 in some places.
Well,
so
like
I know
over $1,500.
So talk to us a little bit about the energy costs and the rising cost of housing.
You know, we know that this is like the number one concern. Inflation is big. I mean, and statewide, it has never cost more to be a Floridian. Home prices continue to rise, making this dream that, you know, all of us have of home ownership just impossible for so many families. And so, you know, we know that renters are also hit with record rents, sky-high increases. And, you know, this has a trickle effect. Auto and property insurance premiums are also at an all-time high. And, you know, the state of Florida has tripled, is three times the national average in insurance. We're the costliest state to live in. And Ron DeSantis continues to ignore this. He ignores this as a problem. We know that wages and wage growth in Florida are well below the national average. And he's only, you know, Ron DeSantis has only made this worse. And, you know, now this is a state that is unaffordable for its residents and its constituents. And so, you know, the hope that we bring and the light that we want to shed to everybody is that, you know, Charlie Crist has an affordable Florida plan. You know, he has promised, you know, Floridians that as governor, Charlie's going to do a lot of things to make things better for everyone. You know, we're going to work on housing, housing affordability, renters, also for home buyers. We want to stop these outrageous electricity rate increases and make sure that there's utility regulation. And so, you know, we know that there's something called the Sadowski Trust Fund, which is the rationale behind it was to make affordable housing and workforce housing. And we know that DeSantis cut that funding in half. So we want to repeal that. We want to fix all of DeSantis' wrongs. We want to make sure that the Sadowski Trust Fund is fully funded because the fund belongs to the people of Florida, the people of Florida that want affordable housing, not, you know, these politicians in Tallahassee that cut and make budget cuts and make these decisions without really understanding the needs of people. And so I know that Governor Crist is going to strengthen and expand, you know, home down payment assistance programs to help more Floridians achieve, you know, this American dream of home ownership. Charlie's also going to appoint somebody in charge of housing who is going to be empowered to support the work of local governments. We need to make sure that local governments can innovate, can meet broad housing affordability goals, you know, while respecting the unique local differences in communities across our state. So we know that all these things are an issue for people, for working regular people like me and you. And we need a governor like Charlie Crist that cares about regular working people like me and you who just can't afford to live in our communities anymore. And so we got a plan. And we got a lot of other plans, too, that I'm just going to put a little plug in here. If there's something that you want to know more about, you visit charliecrist.com. Under charliecrist.com, you'll see all of our plans that we have on climate, on education, on Medicaid expansion, on lowering prescription drugs, everything. But I know this is a top issue, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Well, thank you. Other one is and by the way, there's so many things that we haven't done that we can do through under Charlie Crist with affordable housing. But one of the other things that's coming up, and I believe it's going to be part of the debate this evening, is increasing access to reproductive health for women's rights. We're seeing a national push to make it harder for women to access safe abortions now. And one of the things that I think that Sita had given me was 70% of Latino voters in Florida are in favor of keeping abortion legal. So, and with that population, especially in Florida, what are some of the things that we can look forward to hearing about tonight?
You know, this is a top topic. I mean, it's a hot topic. You know, it's not just Latinas, but yeah, let's focus on minority communities, right? Let's talk about Black and brown women who are disproportionately disadvantaged in terms of health care. But this is just in general a women's rights issue. You know, I'm a mother whose dreams is to leave a better world for my kids. You know, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and to think that my daughter, who's 8 years old, has less rights today than I've had the majority of my life is just something that's really unfathomable.
And I'm so glad you're saying it that way, because I've felt, you know, especially about this issue specifically, it is really more about women's rights. It's really not about abortions or killing babies or whatever people are saying. It's just kind of the same change with that socialism word, you know, like Everything has to change or get a twist to it. So thank you so much for saying the fact that it's about women's rights and not necessarily the typical issue.
It's about treating women with dignity and treating them as full human beings who can make decisions on their own. We would never do this and take away rights from men. And to treat women as second-class citizens in 2022 and go back 50 years of progress is just something that's not okay. Look, you know, I'm a God-fearing woman of faith. And I believe that every woman should have the freedom and liberty to make decisions about their own body just in the intimacy of their family, period. Government should not interfere with a woman's personal decisions. We know that a lot has to happen, for somebody to make a decision like that. And we know that there's no exceptions. I mean, there's no exception for life-saving procedures, no exception for rape, incest, and these have such a tremendous impact on so many communities, because at the end of the day, guess what? I know we can talk real on this radio show. There are going to be people with means that are going to have access to do whatever it is that they want to with their bodies.
Exactly.
There's going to be people that are poor, that do not have access to reproductive health care, that are going to have life-saving procedures because they're at risk of dying because they've had a complication, and they're not going to have the means to make it happen.
For our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Carla Hernandez-Matt, and she is the chosen running mate for Congressman Charlie Crist, who is running for the governor for the state of Florida. So, Carla, you know, you touch on a very important point because, you know, I think people use the terms abortion, they use the term immigration, they use the term sanctuary city, they throw babies out, you know, with babies, they talk about, you know, the Mexicans who are coming for with drugs and guns. And the truth is, we're seeing a lot of hate. We're seeing a lot of division. We're seeing a lot of misinformation. The truth is, a woman who is faced with the challenge of having a child, like my mother used to say, you don't know how somebody's pot is boiling. You don't know what's going on in somebody's house. So don't interfere in their family planning process. I think the most important thing we can do as women is sit down with our boys and girls and our family members and educate them about comprehensive sex education at appropriate ages, as well as academic, trade, joining the military, whatnot, so people are responsible with their reproductive organs. And I think that's the message that a lot of us women are trying to say. It's not about whether you want to carry a child or not, but that is your choice. It should not be a man who is actually wearing a suit and a tie, but acting as though they belong to the Taliban.
Who's never been pregnant.
Because many times these men in suits are acting worse than the Taliban in Afghanistan or people in the Middle East, where they clamp down on a woman's rights to show her hair or her body or whatever it is. So I think it's very important for people to understand that democracy is on the ballot. What would you say to people who say, well, it's not, but I think it is. I think it's gone one step further because we're fighting for our rights. We're fighting for democracy at this point.
Oh, my goodness, sister. You have hit the nail on the head. Democracy is fragile, first of all. I mean, we saw what happened on January 6th. We saw the insurrection. We know what misinformation and disinformation will create, the narrative, the fear-mongering, right? So it's not about, you know, fixing issues that are real, but it's about pitting people against. So let's be anti-immigrant so people can be scared of immigrants, right? That's what DeSantis is doing. He wants people to be, you know, anti-freedoms. And when I say that, I really want our listening audience to think about it, because he acts like a wannabe dictator. You know, he acts like an authoritarian. When you take away women's rights, right, you are taking away somebody's freedom. When you gerrymander two African-American congressional districts out of their voting power by changing a map so that people in Jacksonville don't have representation, you are anti-black community because you're trying to oppress that vote. When you remove four school board members from Broward who are duly elected, you are acting like a fascist. You are acting like a dictator because that's what dictators do. When you ban books, did you know that the state of Florida is number two in the country of the number of banned books that we have? They are banning books, censoring teachers, limiting information. That's all things, these are all characteristics and things that we have seen. He does not believe in democracy.
Well, you know what it is? Some of them just throw the word freedom around like willy-nilly. But freedom actually means you sit down, you have a discussion with people, you agree to disagree at times. It's okay, but you might walk away learning something. And that brings us to the other point of gun violence. How can the state of Florida do better to respond to gun violence? I mean, we all watch what happened at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School, and we watched afterwards, you know, what happened at the sentence. Said, I mean, people are concerned about, we want to appreciate and keep the right to bear arms, but at the same time, we've got to do more to make sure that these guns don't get into the hands of people that don't have proper background checks and things like that.
Absolutely. You know, the entire country is going through a very painful moment in its history. And, you know, you talk about a point that's so important that we actually address at this specific moment, because I don't know if you saw the CNN headlines that came out maybe an hour ago. There was another shooting at a school. I think it was in Ohio. Mm-hmm. You know, it just happened today, this morning. Oh, St. Louis. It was in St. Louis. And, you know, so gun violence is a real thing. And we're on the wrong side of the history. We have politicians that care more about protecting their guns than protecting children. It is the number one cause of death for children under the age of 17 in this country. I mean, think about it. If we let that sink in, if we actually really understood what that means, that gun violence is the number one cause of death for children under 17 in the United States, we get off our butts and actually do something about it. We would make the changes that are necessary to protect our babies. I mean, we're not even asking for something that is unreasonable and irrational. We're asking to protect our babies.
Well, you know, so they protect the babies when they're inside of the mother's womb so much, but when the babies are born and the babies are in danger of someone who has a gun, or someone who, you know, says this baby needs health care, the parents need health care, the parents need a job that has an affordable wage, then they say, wait a minute, we need to talk about this, we need to vote on it, and they go the other way. And so the hypocrisy of those who care about, you know,
I'll even go one further, you're going to ban books and in the same breath have active shooting the training where the kids have to learn how to hide underneath their desks.
Right.
But you want to ban books? There isn't anything I've ever read in a book that I was able to read when I was between the ages of, let's say, 5 and 18 that were any more traumatic than having to go through active shooter training.
And hide under a desk.
Right.
So Carla, so we have a few minutes left for the segment. So one of the questions that somebody had sent to us was, you know, how does Congressman Charlie Crist plan to help with bringing good paying jobs to Florida? Now, I tend to believe that everything starts in the home. The foundation for everything starts in the home. With good parents, industrious people, ambitious people, lay a foundation for the children to go to a great public school with great teachers, because a well-informed society is an educated society as well, right? But what do we do for the ones that say, look, I'm barely making it, I need a better job? Let's talk a little bit about college affordability and trade, and what else can we do to help Floridians so that they too can go to bed knowing to have healthcare, a place to live, and a job.
Absolutely. You know, then these are bread and butter, daily, real struggle and issues. You know, Floridians are struggling with the high cost of living. We need to find ways to alleviate these issues. We can't wait until 2026 for minimum wage to increase to $15 an hour. You know, Florida is one of the worst states in terms of employee earnings, less than a living wage. And today, 42% of Floridians earn less than $50 an hour. We know that's got to change. You know, one of the highlights is that in Congress, you know, Charlie Crist, he's fought for housing affordability. He's fought for access to capital for small businesses, you know, a $15 an hour minimum wage and more. You know, and as governor, I know that Charlie's going to reinstate cost of living adjustments for retired state workers. You know, Florida seniors make up 30% of the state's population, and many of them have earned their monthly checks from the Florida retirement system. And after years of hard work and service to our state, they deserve fair treatment. I mean, think about it. These are people that have served our state, served their communities, and they live on a fixed income, and they can't afford their prescription drug prices. They can't afford to pay the property insurance, so they're going without property insurance. And what I'll tell you this, that I think is going to, like, really just put everything in perspective. I'm a labor leader. You know, I am the president of a teachers union. I believe in paying people, making sure that workers have dignity and respect and they get paid what they're due and what they're worth. So, you know, you have an advocate in me because I understand the middle class struggle. I understand, you know, working people. And I understand that this is something that we need to fight for to make better, to make a Florida that's better for everybody, that's inclusive for
everyone. I'm glad you said that because that bring. I'm glad you said that, Carla, because we only have like 3 minutes left and I wanted to get something out there really quick. You know, we're watching so many people rise up to their own causes of white nationalism and white supremacy. Now, I'm a dark-skinned Indian woman, and my children are mixed with Persian, white. My grandchildren are mixed with white and Indian. We're a mixture. We're brown, we're white, we're black, we're different colors. And I feel like there's so many people that don't understand that the good Lord in heaven or wherever, today's Diwali and I'm Hindu, God made all of us. And we are all supposed to find our purpose and give back to this wonderful, magnificent planet Earth. It's a journey. And I don't think God picks and chooses who is better than who and whose skin is better and whose religion is better and whose, you know, whatever it is. People are using skin color and race and the texture of someone's hair to divide and promote hate and spread misinformation. What can you say that your campaign and Charlie Crist and yourself would do when elected to help us so we don't have to worry about people like the Proud Boys?
That's right. So first of all, happy holiday.
Thank you.
All of you know, the people celebrating out there. I love what it means, what it stands for, and more of us need to just have those principles in our daily life. But I'll tell you this, Charlie and I are completely opposite of DeSantis. We are a 100% upgrade because we want to defend minorities from all of these crazy racist attacks. You know, there's so much like MAGA extremism out there. There's so much hate, disinformation, misinformation, the white nationalism and the propaganda is just out of control. And it really started with President Trump. We know that we have a serious problem in the state when some of the chairs and leaders of the Republican Party are Proud Boys themselves. This is something that they are, you know, just putting out there, elevating. They're intimidating school board members across the state. They're just, you know, there's so much propaganda on hate because they're racist. And we can't do that. We got to be better. And so Charlie Crist and I are going to work hard to ensure that all these types of groups have no influence, zero. There will be no tolerance for this, no influence over the operation of state government ever again. We are better than this. We are all human beings. We have to be deeper than that and just appreciate people for their spirit, for who they are, for what they represent.
And what they offer to the United States. I mean, I know many immigrants who've come to America. And it's like a rebirth. We work hard. We give back. We get involved. We teach our children. And here's the thing, for all the Latinos and immigrants who are supporting Rubio down in Miami, I mean, I know many Cubans that complain about socialism, but yet still their grandmother's on Medicaid. Their pregnant daughter is on pregnancy Medicaid. They're all driving on the roads that we pay taxes for. They use the law enforcement services. If something happens, they call 911. So when people say, I don't believe in socialism, guess what, dude? We're all paying taxes, and you all are enjoying our programs. So I want those Latinos and immigrants and people who are saying stuff like that to stop it. You came to America, and it's your responsibility to work as hard as you want, make as much money as you want, and pay your fair share. Simple as that. So I think people need to reevaluate, but we have a minute left. So tell our listeners really quick about the ways to vote, why they should vote, and give us your website one more time.
So, you know, early voting has started in many places across the state. We need you to make sure that you go after, that you go vote, that you vote early. Don't wait till November 8th. Vote early. Go to an early voting site and take 5 friends. Take 7 friends. But talk about the issues that are important. Because we want to make sure that all communities survive and they thrive and that they're better for everyone. And, you know, if you want more information, you can go to iwillvote.com or I think it might be iwillvote.org. I can't remember if it's ORG or .com. But on iwillvote, it shares information about when early voting starts, important information that voters need to know. But this is the time to use our voices. And I tell folks all the time, if our vote and voice were not important, then they wouldn't go through so much trouble trying to eliminate our vote. All these voter suppression tactics wouldn't exist. So use the power of your vote because it's important, and we have it, and people have fought hard for us to get it. And we need minority representation. We need people that are going to fight for our communities.
And you
so
heard
all these things matter. Make sure you go out and vote. Visit charliechris.com for more information and watch the debate. And
yes,
be active on social media. Tell many friends about the great things you see in Governor Charlie Crist.
That is a fantastic. Hopefully everybody got all of that information. We are going to take a quick station break and listen to our sponsors. Carla Hernandez, thank you so much for all of your insight and for calling in today. We will make sure that we get a watch party together for that debate tonight. And we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these quick messages.
Need it fast. MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Miss Ellen.
We are on 1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button and catch us live right here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida, or you can get us on our archive shows on cedamediainc.com, which is our website.
Right, and a great first segment with Charlie Crist running mate Carla Hernandez-Matz, and she spoke very eloquently and educated our listeners on the campaign and why we should vote. And now we've got Lisa Reisbeck, and she's an author, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about herself and why she wrote her book about human connections, mental health, addiction, and so much more. Lisa, welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. I absolutely love your show, so I very much appreciate it.
Girl, tell us a little bit about your company's Significant Souls and a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So Significant Souls is a premise that everybody is important, specifically like a homeless person, right? So you might pass by somebody that's panhandling. It may seem insignificant to you, but in reality, that is somebody's brother or uncle or sister or aunt. And so my business hopes to shine a light on humanizing people so that we can help populations. So my background is that I have a bachelor's degree in psychology. I have a master's degree in studies in human behavior. And my book is hashtag Family Addictions 101. And it's actually for people that want to learn more about addictions, not necessarily for the addict themselves. They will read the book and say, yep, that's true.
So Lisa, this is Allie. I just wanted to ask in that addiction area there, then I may have misinterpreted what you said about family addiction. Is it that when one is addicted, the family needs addiction help, the whole family? How does the phrase family addiction work?
Yes, exactly. So family addictions is basically about helping the family, right? So you have somebody that's maybe using or becoming addicted to drugs. You are not familiar with that area. You're not sure how to help your loved one. You really don't know what addiction is. And this book sort of guides you through that. That's why it's a 101. It's just a very short book on explaining what is addiction, what are the causes of addiction, how can we most support addiction, what is the term tough love that we always hear thrown around, what is, you know, the solutions, and who can we go to help? And
there aren't many places in all 50 states, there aren't many places where people can actually get the help they need. So, Lisa, what made you write this book? Because I'm looking at all the stuff that you wrote about, and it's all true. But how did you end up writing the book?
Well, so I worked at a crisis center, and I've also worked at a day mental health homeless shelter. And what I was hearing, so I began having listening sessions with people that were in crisis, and I began listening to the commonalities that they had. And a lot of them had past trauma. A lot of them had or severed relationships and felt very alone. And I thought, wow, maybe the missing link is actually positive connections, because if we are not establishing positive connections, whether it's early in childhood or whether it's later as teenagers, early adults, then it's only natural for us to gravitate towards a negative connection, such as a drug or an addiction. It could be food, cigarettes, drinking. And so this is really trying to tie in the fact that addiction isn't something to be scared of, right? It's not something to run away from. Addicts are not, you know, they don't all steal. They don't all lie. You know, they are significant souls, just like we are. So it's, you know, really, I think a lot of treatment centers are failing in the sense that they're very much individual oriented, right? So they may have a family day where you get to come in and visit your addict, but do they really have family involvement so that the whole family can sort of be involved and be a part of the healing process?
Well, it's almost like you have to have a care plan, right? That once someone is admitted into a facility, or maybe they're being seen by a team of doctors or therapists or whatever, that you do say we need to have some time where the entire family comes in and let everyone have like group therapy almost. In order for one person to heal, you need the entire group there.
Exactly. And in my book, I talk about that at the end, how, you know, there has to be safe places, right, for an addict to go. There has to be support. And support doesn't necessarily mean that you let the addict back in your house and, you know, be all scared and everything like that. But support looks like a whole team, just like you said, a medical doctor, a mental health, you know, whether a psychologist or psychiatrist. And then, yes, definitely a friend or family member, somebody that really can identify with the addict and help to determine for that addict, what is it that you're missing? That, you know,
One of the things that Sita always says in the show is that foundation starts in the home, you know, and
absolutely.
And one of the things that I think that I read was that one of your beliefs is that mental health and connection should be prioritized in schools as early as possible before the addict thing even comes up, right? And one of the other things, too, is that that you're sort of an activist or a proponent, certainly, for in giving tax breaks for two working parents. Let's give out breaks to parents who choose to stay home. And
absolutely.
And really concrete that foundation, right, of that love, of that connection, of that feasibility.
Yes, because what happens is, as a child, you know, we have that sort of detachment from our parents, and then instead of our parents being our biggest influencer, it becomes our peers. And so if you establish relationships with negative, you know, aspects of it, then, you know, you're going to gravitate towards that because it's going to help with your trauma. I think the biggest thing that I think of is, in schools, when there's, say, a shooting or a catastrophe that can happen in school, so many times we hear that officials and legislators are saying, you know, we're going to have mental health on staff, a standby, so that, you know, the children can come in and talk if they need to. Well, I really don't think that that's the right approach. I think the approach is, don't wait for them to come in. Let's speak to them anyways, because a child may not speak up and understand that they need the help, right? They may just be like, oh, I'm fine. I have no problem. But in reality, speaking about it will help them internalize it and help to establish, you know, that healthy growth from it instead of it being a negative impact in their life and possibly even a lifelong impact, right?
Well, it seems like we're so reactive, right? We're not proactive. Like, all those things should be happening year-round. Don't wait for a shooting situation then to bring in an extra mental health counselor. Like, have somebody available, readily available, all through the year for the children, right? For the students.
Yeah.
And I think what I'm hearing you saying is everybody needs a tribe. I mean, life is about relationships, right? Whether you find those relationships in your church, in your mosque, in your temple, whether you find a relationship at home with your siblings, or even listening to my friend Ellen sing. She's got a tribe that goes to hear her sing. Or Allie is in a retirement place now and she's got her tribe. But I think what you're saying is everybody needs to find their purpose and find someone who will listen to them and be there when they need them the most.
Yes, exactly. One of my biggest projects that I'm working on right now is to shine light on the homeless population, because I feel so many times when we see them, we pass by, we don't really think about their story, right? They all have significant stories. When I worked in the homeless shelter, I was like, wow, I can't believe you're even here to tell this story. You survived this. And it's just amazing. And yet, you know, people don't really take that trauma and what brought them there into consideration. They think, well, you know, they didn't work hard. They made bad decisions. When in reality, they just didn't have maybe the right starting point, right, that some people do. So if we don't all start out at the same way, we're not going to have the same opportunities. I heard it best from a professor that said, look, you can play musical chairs all you want and you can be as good as you want, but there are not always enough chairs to go around, right?
So right.
That's sort of...
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I get from your writing as well is being poor is exhausting. It's hard for so many people, and people pass judgment on others. And you're right, everyone has a story to tell. But what we find in these trying times, we see politicians who constantly talk about a pregnancy and a woman who's pregnant and that baby they're carrying and all these wonderful things about bringing a life on earth. But once the life hits once it pops right out of that womb, the politicians are all walking the other way. These people who are poor and have issues, whether it's mental or physical or emotional, they were all little babies in someone's womb at one time. So what do you think has happened to humanity that people turn their backs the other way now when these people need help?
Well, gosh, I know, right? This is such a significant thing that's happening right now. And I heard once that somebody, and it sort of made sense, where they said the unborn is the easiest to protect, right? Because they can't speak back. But once they're born, they become a person then, and then the protection goes, right? Then they're like, okay, well, we're done now. The the fetus is born and it's no longer, you know, unvoiced. But I think the disconnect is just not having those human connections. For example, when I hear people say that there is not systemic racism, I think, my gosh, do you have any black friends or any brown friends that you can speak to identify with them? Because I think it's so much of them versus us, right? Right now, it depends on what jersey you're wearing. It really doesn't depend on what your beliefs are. They speak for all people, but that's not most people. I feel like I hear so many different things on the streets than I actually do from the politicians speaking. And as far as the port, you know, you hear so many times people say, well, they just need to work harder, right? And that's not true. I know a large population of people that work very hard, sometimes two or three jobs, and still are not able to get ahead. So it's, you know, it's really about connecting. I feel like there's just a lot of disconnecting. I feel like more community support would help. I feel like I said,
pouring resources into all communities, no matter what the zip code is. Like if one community has a sidewalk with no cracks where someone can trip and fall down, then the other communities should have that too. If one community has a public school that's functioning with great teachers and a great curriculum, all the communities should have that too. It shouldn't be that one is designated better than the other based on their wealth or status or income tax or their tax bracket. But I think what I'm hearing you saying as well is, in order for us to have positive connections with children and with our communities, we all need to do our part. And my thing is, we should have an international potluck day when everybody could show up with something and eat and cook and laugh, and I could bring my curry chicken and people could just sit down and talk. Because I think you're right. Once you start talking to people, you recognize that it doesn't matter what their skin color is or their background. They're just human beings who are looking for love and acceptance, and they want to be appreciated as well.
Exactly. So it's really getting to know your neighbors, right? So just establishing, like you said, those group villages that, you know, everybody can kind of come together. It's difficult to do that in these days and times, but I still have hope, because I know that for me, when I have to hire a mechanic, I like to hire a mechanic that is doing side jobs that could really use the money. And then when they come, I feed them and I like go out and talk to them. Because the thing is that when you do that, it's sort of hard for them to like rip you off, right? Nobody can really rip off or be mean to somebody that's being really nice to them.
Yeah, giving them some food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, you know what I noticed too, since I am a nurse and I have a lot of friends who are in the medical professions as well as family members, treatment facilities and crisis centers are like revolving doors. And the prognosis is very low for some of those centers, because people go right back unless they come out and their friends and family are willing to forgive, look towards the future, and not look back. Like oftentimes people would end back up in those places because once they were out, they didn't get the support that they needed to keep out of a treatment facility.
Right. Aftercare is everything. What we were noticing at the crisis center is exactly that. We had, you know, binders, thick as ever for each client, because it was a revolving door. But what we were expecting of these clients was that we could get them under, you know, stable conditions, but then we'd plop them right back into their old environment. So if you do that, you know, A plus B is always going to equal C. So you need to change it up and find a different approach. And one of the things that I feel is necessary is to determine what it is that's going on the inside, which seems to be very little addressed during treatment and especially after treatment. And I feel like if we were actually to seek out the individuals that are in crisis when they leave crisis to say, how's it going? How are you doing? Are you connecting with all of your resources? Do you need help? Do you, is your living environment safe? We really need to follow through on these items for these, you know, individuals that just feel like the world has sort of left them behind, and they feel like a, you know, fish out of water when they get out.
Well, they feel they useless, and they feel like they're not of no good anymore, you know. So here's the thing. We've got politicians running for office, and we see so many people showing up, you know, for a photo op. Have you ever written a letter to the United States Congress and outlined everything you just told us? Because it seems as though the politicians are so far from reality of what's, when they say boots on the ground, we need their boots really on the ground at these mental health crisis centers and these treatment centers to see what's happening with real live human beings who really being poor is expensive for them. Some of them have no health care. Some of them have no family support. So, you know, people need to think twice when they're running for office and they're just saying things that really has no meaning because they're not in touch with the real people on the ground.
That's so true. And I have actually written a lot of letters, and I've written on, you know, the children, how we are failing our children, I believe, in so many different aspects. And also, I canvass every weekend for volunteering. And what I hear on the streets is completely different than what I hear the politicians say. And so it's just fascinating to hear what people are saying. And they are just fed up.
Give us your website, Lisa Reisbeck, one more time so that our listeners could check out your book. And they could get to know a little bit more about you. And you are delightful. It's awesome to have someone so calm speaking about such an issue that affects everyone. Everybody wakes up every day and looks good on the outside, but so many people have demons on the inside.
Exactly. Let's address those and tell their story, right? Because if we tell their story, it'll make them significant. My book, check it out, is #FamilyAddictions101. My website is www.lisareisbeck.com.
And you had asked about your segment, if you can get a recording. And Ellen, my right hand, Ellen, and my friend Allie, who's here, we're a team. We'll make sure you get that podcast as well.
And we've also shared all of your information, including your because one of the things you asked for was some stories, I believe, on your website. So author at lisareisbeck.com. LisaReisbeck.com, and Facebook, it's under Lisa Reisbeck SS. So it's, and that's spelled L Lisa and then Reisbeck. So we will make sure we share all of that, not only on our Facebook page, but also on our website. And we'll definitely get you that MP3, which is available after every single show, available on the archive on 1510 WWBC almost immediately after the show, like within a few hours anyway. But once again, Sita, a fantastic episode here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Lisa, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story and your book with us. Certainly, Carla Hernandez, thank you so much for calling in. Allie Tamber, thanks for being with us. And once again, join us each and every week right here on 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.